On the cover, a lighthouse cuts a dark silhouette against the fresh blush of colors rising over the bay as a new sun climbs. The small form of a boy stands below the guiding beam of light and looks out over his broken city. Today is a new day.
Are you seeking thrilling tales of adventure and superheroics? Do you crave the weekly drama of teenage hijinks and high school angst? Then don't miss the next issue of These Protean City Comics. This issue featuring...
It's Puck, the Doom Trickster. You're not going to remember me.
Now with our heroes assembled, let's turn the page on this issue of Protean City Comics.
This is Volume 21, Recovery, Issue 1, Moving Again.
We start with a shot looking at Puck's sanctuary from the outside, looking up this enormous lighthouse and seeing the, like, rickety way that you have to move to go up it. And there's some snow kind of falling a little bit in the background, just sort of swirling around. We get just essentially some text overlay saying 2 weeks after Mega Condor's attack, and then, like, editor's note smaller, and the fall of Falcon, editor's note again, kind of a lot has happened. And our next panel is inside the sanctuary.
It's a... So the room that the sanctuary is in is what would have been an office for the lighthouse keeper. So it has some of the sort of like... It's a rounded room. It has some of the sort of like cold industrial office wear, like office stuff. Like, it's got a big metal desk probably that's like a faded mint green.
Yeah.
And some like uncomfortable metal chairs with a lot of drawers and filing cabinets. But Puck has brought up a big like old beat up couch. There's probably a cot.
Okay.
Somewhere. And that's maybe like, maybe was part of the original stuff in case the lighthouse keeper was up there late. But Puck has sort of brought up a new mattress and maybe piled a couple on top of it to make it a little more comfortable.
Yeah.
If he ever needs to sleep there. There's a couple mini fridges of sodas and food, but not like good food, but just like whatever. I think we established it's whatever snacks the little fairy minions that sort of hover around. It is also a place where the little like fairies that Puck creates that are manifestations of his mind and his powers. They are always sort of flitting around. There's always a couple moving things or dragging something, opening a bag of chips, hanging up like maybe Christmas lights or holiday lights. And there's a couple probably porthole, like larger sized porthole windows to the outside that have probably begun to like frost over as the weather has gotten colder.
Nice.
But it's homey in a weird way. There's probably a nice rug over the like linoleum flooring or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a big I'm imagining like a big like submarine door, like rounded oval door with a hatch that opens up to the outside.
A Warner's Brothers style door.
Yeah, where you have to like, which is where you'd have to go to climb up to the actual light, but also now where you have to climb down because the actual like internal rounded staircase has all like deteriorated and you can't go down that way. You've got to climb down the side of the lighthouse.
Fantastic. And so I think sitting on the cot right now is Holly.
Yes.
There's a big editor's note that has a whole bunch of information and then a little tiny editor's note that underneath it says like, we told you this was going to be a lot. And Holly is, this is technically Holly's second body.
Yeah.
Because Holly is a clone of a young Korean woman named Holly, who had been Striped Eagle, and a clone. Lots of clones were made of her, and this is one of them. And as the original Holly was dying, her brain was put into this clone, or her memories were put into this clone.
Maybe even a little after.
Yeah, maybe even a little after her death. The memories were put into this body by Puck. And so she is, she's athletically built. She has She has an undercut that's kind of started to like grow in at this point because she hasn't been like taking care of it quite as well with everything that's been going on. And as far as I know, she's been in hiding for 2 weeks because everybody thinks that she's dead. And certainly nobody knows that she is in the body of one of her clones.
Yeah, I imagine also that we probably get a couple cells of those, like those the 2 weeks that have been gone or that have passed, where like this was a Holly clone that had also been, I think, in there was the explosion of the original Striped Eagle Mark II armor.
Yeah.
And so this was a Holly clone that had been injured in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also between that and the sort of the copying of the original Holly's memories, that so there's probably a lot of scenes or cells of Puck helping her like relearn how to walk, doing kind of like basic physical therapy stuff.
Yeah.
As she's sort of like both physically rehabilitating and mentally sort of like becoming like regaining control of this body.
Yeah. And like we get a couple panels that show her doing like some journaling and like memory writing down, and has like there's a couple pages that show like essentially like a little T chart with memories on the left and right side, and like differences between memories and things like that.
Because this did not go.
This did not go super smoothly. Yeah.
Definitely not as well as I had planned.
And so she's sitting there on the side of the cot. She's got a corn Fanta with her, and is just in like probably leggings and a sweatshirt. Probably maybe like a Centurion sweatshirt. Because that's awesome.
And it would have been something that Puck would have had lying around.
Yeah, exactly. She probably had to. She probably borrowed the leggings, not from Puck.
The fairies,
maybe sent some fairies,
got some stuff,
just to, like some comfy clothes. And then is Puck there as well? Is Puck just getting in?
Yeah, I think so. Like the big door swings open, and he comes in probably with some food or something.
Cool. Is he dressed as Puck or is he in his John persona?
He would just be John.
Cool. Can you describe John for us real quick?
Yeah, John would be coming in as just dressed like himself, not in the hero costume.
Yeah.
He is a young, I think I had said 16-ish, maybe a sophomore in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like a middling height, but slender built kind of guy. His parents are, like his mom is a CEO and his dad is some kind of a researcher at the university.
Yeah.
They do pretty well for themselves. So he's like, comes from a well-to-do family. He's dresses pretty preppy, like nice jeans or slacks and a collared shirt.
Yeah.
And also he plays football on the high school team. He's the football team's kicker. So like there's sort of a jock persona that he puts on a little bit when he's just being himself. And that's kind of what people expect from him. He would be coming in with a couple bags of. Oh, I should also say physically he has kind of like he's pale skin, darker brown hair, and very just like sunken eyes. If you were a person who was just looking at him, you would see a kid who is worried about high school and being like overly stressed by like how the next game is going to go, probably hasn't slept enough studying for a final or something like that, or a midterm. But if you are one of his friends, someone in the know, then obviously you can see the like this doom consuming him.
Holly definitely tenses when the door starts to open, and I think she even like goes and grabs onto the Fanta bottle and just is like kind of ready with it, and then puts it down when you come in and gives a nod, and then just goes right back to her book. Like she's writing down. It looks pretty intense. Like she's written down a bunch of memories. She's on a page with memories of her parents, and is just kind of like. One of the sides is filled in with like all sorts of details and information, everything like that. And the other side, which is labeled original, the clone had zero memory of anything having to do with her family and is like she's just trying to write down her full like autobiographical experience to figure out what is going on in her head.
I think so. John would set the food down, maybe like spend a moment putting away some cans of like SpaghettiOs or something.
Mm-hmm.
in one of the drawers or cabinets that are whatever around the this office sanctuary.
Yeah.
And he would grab, like, he probably has a couple different upholstered chairs because we've established that, like, people come and hang out here sometimes.
Yeah.
And he would drag one of those over towards the cot where Holly is sitting.
Yeah.
And just kind of wait until she's finishing, but, like, obviously, like, looking at her. And
yeah. And we get, like, a couple of panels of her continuing to write and just being focused. And in the background, we see this weird crystalline version of John walk by. He's got, like, some crystally aspects to his skin, but he looks like a spider centaur of John.
Yeah.
And he goes over and just, like, opens one of the cabinets that John put a can into, looks at it, makes a face of disgust, puts it back and closes it before just, like, leaving without saying anything.
Okay.
He's been very weird lately.
Yeah.
He's been getting weirder and weirder. He's this kind of psychic manifested servant that Puck has.
He's an
aide. That is a part of him.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's an aspect of the sanctuary that is a protection from the view of the trickster.
Yeah.
And so where when he is out in the world, John only manifests the fairies as small entities that are probably going unnoticed. In the safety of the sanctuary, he can manifest a larger one. And so he has this as an aid to help him manage the place. And command the other fairies as they move around and do stuff.
And I think he sticks around.
Yeah, he stays in the sanctuary.
But he's definitely been, he's been distant and weird.
Yeah, John has definitely noted, like, as he walks past, John would note those changes again and kind of, like, furrow his brow and look at it and just, like, make a mental note to, like, look into that in a moment.
And at that point, I think Holly, like, just puts her pen into the book and closes it down and sets it to the side and goes, the memory exercises seem to be going well. I'm remembering most of everything, I think. But there's some holes.
Yeah. We knew that. It was gonna be a problem.
Yeah.
I think we need to have a conversation about the trickster. Because your memory is you're getting better. You're pulling together. You're moving better. The physical therapy has been paying off. Like, you are probably going to be wanting to leave soon, and so we need to have a conversation about that.
Yeah, leaving is definitely on the list of things to do. And she looks like she gives a glance towards, there's like a TV that you have up there, and you can see that it's muted. But a newscaster on it is talking, and there's, like, the bar underneath that says, like, the clone problem, ? And has also, like, you know, clearly that has been something that has been on the news, because something like 100 of her have been around the city.
Yeah. Suddenly unled by a government organization.
Yeah, and they don't, these 100, essentially, like, maybe even a couple of hundred essentially captives that have been trained to be soldiers are just now, like, you know, they're working out where people are going, and, like, the orphanages and things like that are taking people in, and foster system is taking people in and trying to take care of stuff. But obviously that's not a sustainable situation. Yeah.
John would glance over at the big main door that he came in earlier. And the assistant sort of maybe left through, and and besides being a big, like rotary locking door, kind of like bank vault style, it also has, like, runes and stuff around the outside of the door,
nice.
Where he has spent time practicing magics, making this place safe.
Yeah.
But there are also physical locks.
Yeah.
And so he kind of glances over that and then glances back to Holly, and he would say, like, I'm not keeping you here. I want to be clear about that. I'm just...
No. Yeah.
So, I know I've been coy about this, but I need to tell you about my powers and the things that haunt me, because I fear that the way that this happened, and he kind of like gestures at her notes of her memories and to her, may have put you at risk too. And that's why I've been encouraging you to stay here.
She stops for a minute and picks up her notebook again and goes back, and there's shuffling of pages and everything. And she goes, the vault, not the vault, the cell. Yeah, the cell. And she like pulls it back, and you can see that she's like really sketchily drawn. She's not in any way an artist. And it is, I think, a picture that the readers have seen.
Yeah.
But I think John hasn't, although he's kind of aware of this, that there's just like a scorch mark with your name, John Hobb, on the wall.
Yeah.
And she says, like, you know, I've got one copy of this one, of this memory. This was someone that you asked me to keep an eye on.
The Burning Man.
The Burning Man. It doesn't stick in my head. I can't get it to stick in my... I think that's your thing, not my thing.
Yeah, it's possible.
But that you said that he went through one of your portals and was connected to energy and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you think that this, and she's like pointing at her head and then down at the T-test, like the T-line papers.
Yeah.
Could put me in a similar situation?
Yeah. So, big picture. And kind big of John picture. Makes a gesture with his hands. When I was young, before Puck, I stole some magic.
And at this point, we get panels that are... They're not the exact art from the old one. Like, it's not just, like, a reprint section. But this is, like, in, like, this very... like flowy, colorful, not a lot of dark lines art style that was from his original comic.
I stole some magic from a god, a trickster god. I interrupted a ritual. It wasn't my intention. It's not important why. I didn't know the repercussions of what I was doing. I was looking for power. I needed to be a hero. And I wasn't ready for the cost that would come with that. I was a dumb kid. I maybe still am a dumb kid.
Yeah, there's a big panel of her just grinning right at him.
And I don't know that I need to say this, but the god that I stole powers from, he wasn't exactly thrilled with that.
I wouldn't think so. That seems like something... I mean, like, if I was a god that had great powers, I'd probably, explode you while you're in a cell, leaving a cryptic message.
Yeah, hunt you down forever and remove you from all of history is, I think, what's coming.
Woof, okay.
Yeah. And so, it's kind of weird. Like, I kind of don't... And he maybe, like, reaches over and grabs... There's, like, piles of books, too, on these desks. And he grabs one of the books and, like, flips through some things, through some of his notes on this, and says, like it's kind of hard to explain, but, like, he's not present here. Like, he's not... He can't come to our world. Like, he's in, like, a higher plane, like a deity god plane thing.
Right,
And so it's hard for him to sort of see where I am. Because, like, people all kind of look the same.
Okay.
But the more that I use my powers, the more he sees me. And the bigger I go, the clearer the vision is.
So cutting a memory is a little thing.
Yeah.
Opening
a portal to somewhere else is bigger. And when I moved the Burning Man, he was about to explode and kill people. I was very stressed. I think we went there to... That space? We were only there for a couple seconds, but he saw us very clearly.
And that's how he was able to...
And so he was able to see the Burning Man and follow him.
There's a panel that just shows Holly, like, looking down at her book, and her nose just sort of wrinkles in frustration, and she just, like, tosses it down on the table and goes, Puck? If you put my brain into a different body of myself, just so I could get fucking killed 3 weeks later, I'm gonna murder you.
He's gonna kind of like smile that she's not super depressed about this and like is at least taking it a little bit with humor. Or he's taking that as humor, at least. She might mean it as a threat.
She like stands up and like just kind of grabs a pillow and like tosses it at your face, which would be fun goofing around, but she's very strong and it definitely like hits with like a poomph and probably some like feathers scattering about. And she gets into like, you see her take on like this very like military precise movement. Mm-hmm. You know that moving in the new body has been weird and has been like a difficult thing for her to do, but she's falling into this like precise thing that she was in when she was involved with Falcon, right? Like this is default mindset. Mm-hmm. And she goes, okay, so you've got a plan.
I have two plans.
Okay.
I have a plan to save myself.
Okay.
And I have a new plan to save you.
Great. I'd love to hear about both of them. I have a little bit more interest in that second one, if I'm being real honest.
I think that's the easier one.
Great. That's good news.
I need to take you to see a friend of mine. And so we're going to have to leave here. One of the reasons why I've encouraged you to stay here is that, and like gesturing to the runes and stuff, he's going to say, the trickster can't see you here, as far as I can tell. Like, I've done a lot of work to make this a sanctuary, a safe place. So when you were here, you should be safe. If you want to stay here forever, it's not a huge place to live. But I did this to you. And so if you need it, then you can have my sanctuary.
No, I'm not gonna live in a cage for the rest of my life.
Okay.
Eagles don't live in cages.
I wasn't saying you had to, just offering it as a resource.
And she's just like walking straight over towards the door, pulling up the hood on her sweatshirt.
Yeah.
She's ready to freaking go. She's been looking like she's been waiting to have the reason to go.
Yeah. Reaching down to a table somewhere and picking up the plague doctor mask. Mm-hmm. Puck is going to put on the mask and say, "Let's go see Dr. Amari."
Great. Is there any transformation that happens with that? It's
no, not really. No, it's like, just kind of like vague. Like he's often like just drawn like a kid and then drawn with the whole costume on. Yeah. Like it's just kind of instantaneous and off screen somewhere.
And there's a little bit of like black mist that's coming out the sides of the mask and dripping down a little bit from the eyes as well, which is a new visual feature that is connected to the way that you do magic.
Yeah.
Which is connected to the trickster. Like that black kind of reality ripping mist is part of it.
Heat shimmer is how heat shimmer.
Yeah, exactly.
We would see a series of cells of frame of scenes of the two of us climbing down the outside of the tower of the lighthouse with the sort of big spinning light ahead above us. We might get a shot of the aide, the fairy Puck, sort of at the top, looking out over the water, being weird and pensive or whatever he's doing now.
And we get like a little voice bubble from him, and it goes, he's just going like, "Eat a vegetable, John. Eat a vegetable."
And once we get down, so like there's maybe like a quarter of the tower you have to climb on this like rickety old rusty ladder on the outside, and then you can kind of get in and then just walk down the normal stairs. Mm-hmm. And on the ground, we're sort of out on a peninsula a little bit.
Yeah,
but it's weirdly, it's like usually you see pictures of lighthouses and they're off by themselves. This one's weird because it's part of the university.
Yeah.
So there are some small older buildings that aren't used as much in the area. And there's a big like double doors that opens up into a underground area, like a basement under the lighthouse. And so Puck would lead Holly down into those. And from there, it's a series of tunnels to sort of lead back deeper under the university.
Yeah.
And eventually we would come out into this lab that is sort of Dr. Amari and John's secret lab. I imagine that actually she's probably packing up.
Okay.
Because, like...
Because she was here.
She was here because John was protecting her. He had thwarted some criminals who were trying to steal some of her equipment.
Yeah.
And so he had offered her this secret lab as a place to come. And so there's, like, we had described a big sort of table that had a bunch of, like, 3D projectors that were projecting up maps of the city and and sort of like Iron Man style projections of the things they were working on. But I imagine it's a lot more boxes as she's starting to pack up some of this stuff.
Yeah.
There's maybe a couple other people there moving in and out as she brings. She probably always had a couple people that she brought in. She has some other scientist friends who sort of fall into that. Dr. Morris style, like they're scientists, but they are also heroes. Also, and so some of them might have come down to visit from time to time.
Although Dr. Morris, a mouse, is probably not helping with moving.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So yeah, so she's just in like a university lab t-shirt because she's doing work. And she's a woman, I think, in her late 30s. She has an engagement ring and they always draw it to like make sure that that's shown in the shot at least once, because that's kind of important to her. To her previous relationship, editor's note, see Dr. Sublimation number 35. But yeah, she, like, when the door opens, she looks over and goes, just without even looking over, she goes, "Be careful with that next box. It's very breakable. And if you spin it, it's going to go very poorly for you. Just keep it straight and flat."
And as he steps into the lab, John's gonna pull off the mask and it'll just like he'll put it in something. Like there's all it often just like disappears.
Yeah.
He's still in the like the black jacket with the hood, but pulled down now. And he would just speak up and say, "Dr. Amari, it's John. Sorry."
"Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get through this day. I'm just looking forward to a 6-month span of time that I don't need to move my lab. Would be just wonderful."
"Yeah. I have someone I'd like to introduce you to."
"Okay."
And he would sort of step out of the way and gesture at Holly.
And Holly puts back her hood in like the big dramatic comic book way.
Yeah. And John would say, "This is Holly."
"Yes. Hi." Dr. Amari walks over and like offers a hand. She looks a little bit confused. Like she doesn't seem hesitant so much as confused, like feeling like there's something she's supposed to be doing. And kind of looks at you and goes, "Moving, interested in pursuing scientific pursuits?"
And John is going to turn to Holly and sort of say, "I understand if you don't want to tell her. We can probably proceed without telling her, but it might be easier if, I don't know how, if you want to be..."
"No, just do it. Hi, I'm the real Holly."
Yeah, he's going to turn back to Dr. Amari and say, "Speaking of moving labs..."
"Oh, John."
"So, this is not one of the clones." "Well, it is."
"Okay."
"But it's also the original Holly."
"Fascinating." That, and like you can see like her eyes are lighting up, because immediately anytime there's anything that is new to her, especially if it is a thing that is new to her that she can immediately think of uses for, she is like on it. And so like she goes up to Holly, and I'm like, Holly is definitely panting a little bit, like breathing heavy from doing the effort of getting down. She's extremely strong, but just hasn't been climbing down buildings. And so she like gets her moving over to a chair and grabs, there's a big box of Joe, and pours a couple of paper cups.
Yeah. So we've spoken in the past about my sort of ability to manipulate memories.
Yes.
And you read the news story about how Holly died?
Yes. I was so sorry to hear that. Are you back, or did it not happen?
It happened. John will kind of like butt in.
Yeah.
and say, but I was there when it happened, and in a possibly rash action, I copied all of her memories into this clone body.
And Holly kind of gives a nod and says, not my finest moment, or probably his either, but now we're here where we are, and as I understand it, we are making a plan to save ourselves. Are you involved with the plan? Is this something that you're also... How has John doomed you?
John is going to kind of like put a hand on her shoulder and just be like, one step at a time. She doesn't know about the plan yet. It's she's been maybe working on it. And she doesn't know about the plan yet. But I think that it should be easy. It's based off of... And he kind of like gets ahead of himself a little bit, and then he's going to stop, take a breath, turn to Dr. Amari and say, we've been working on some time travel, some time manipulating technologies.
That's yes.
Like,
yes.
That's like what your science is.
Yes. You may not know of me. I'm an expert in time distortion and time possibilities, movements between time planes and things like that. Bending mostly.
And like one of the things that made me intrigued about your technology originally when we met, was it a year ago? God, it was a year ago.
Editor's note, it was 14 volumes ago, volume 6, Blinded by Science.
You were showing off your time bubble?
Yes.
That was able to like suppress time energies? I don't know. Bend time. But so I had an idea. Because many of your tools, your machines, they like hyper energize
everything in an area. Yes.
And one of the things that I think that we should try to experiment for Holly is doing the opposite of like dampening the energies of molecules and everything in an area.
Okay.
So I haven't told you about the source of my powers exactly.
And then the next panel is the next, we turn the page and Amari just has like this look of just bafflement on her face. And she nods and says, okay, interesting.
So I think if we can like dampen the energies inside her, then maybe that will help.
Then she won't be as obvious. The Trickster's demiplane.
Yeah. She won't stand out as much.
That could be. It might also slow her down. Like this, I could almost certainly do it temporarily, but it would involve essentially stasis.
Yeah.
And that's not, I think, what anybody wants.
I think that there is also a moment too where when she says stasis,
mm-hmm.
John sort of has a memory of Dr. Sublim
mm-hmm.
locked in a crystal.
Yeah, Dr. Sublim is her fiance who is a superhero who sublimates energy.
Yeah.
And so he creates like physical presences out of energy.
And he
trapped the Void Rat, which is an enormous cosmic villain,
yeah.
in essentially an enormous crystal,
and John,
with himself.
John also would have been actively avoiding that conversation.
Yeah.
And so this is sort of the closest they've ever come to maybe talking about that.
Yeah, and there is definitely just like two panels in a row of the two of them just like sitting in that moment. And Holly says, I've done stasis before, done two sets of it even. And she kind of like gives Buck a bit of a grin and goes, if that's what it takes, you know.
But I don't want to have saved you just for you to die. And I also don't want to have saved you just for you to like go into a tube somewhere.
Well, how long are you thinking you'd be sidelining me?
I don't know. I mean, there are days where I feel like my plan, the other half of this plan, is right around the corner. And there are other days where I feel like I'm getting swept up in something. And I mean, if the trickster finds me and removes me, erases me, then maybe you'll be fine. He'll probably move on.
Okay, that sounds like you're sharing a vulnerability or weakness.
Yeah.
So what's that look like for the doomed?
So when you share a vulnerability or weakness with someone, give them influence over you and ask them if they honestly think there's hope for you. If they say yes, mark potential or clear one box of your doom track. If they say no, mark a condition or mark your doom track.
She just kind of looks down for a minute and looks up at Puck and says, listen, I saw my parents on TV today, and they don't know I'm still here. And I appreciate that you got me back and everything. But like, if my worst case scenario is that you lose and that I'm let out, and my best case scenario is that you win and I'm let out, then maybe that's what we need to do, is do the lock. And I think she doesn't think that you can do it. I think this feels bigger than what she is used to doing. Mm-hmm. And she's used to having like a big organization at her back.
Yeah.
And she's just scared and having her life tied into it. I don't think that she thinks that you can do it.
Okay. I'm going to mark insecure.
Okay.
Because I think that John was feeling like this was going well. We're figuring things out. Like, he is feeling more like he just saved a girl's life from his point of view. And like, we're like, he's finally like, he told her about his doom.
Yeah.
He told Dr. Amari about it. Like, we're starting to like formulate a plan. He's feeling better about this. And then she's like, I don't know, maybe I should just like lock myself away.
Yeah.
I don't know if I trust like that you can do it.
Yeah.
That's a big hit.
Yeah. And like, you can see she doesn't feel super great about having said that. There's a time for hard conversations,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Amari just like watches the two of you for a moment and then stands up and says, all right, so let's get moving on what we need to do. We can certainly set up a stasis pod and have that ready.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to give up on the idea that we could build
a mobile
something,
one.
Like something like a chest piece or a suit or something that she could live in.
It might certainly be possible. I can talk to Dr. Herschel. The mutant dampening powers, I think, might be
adjacent.
Adjacent, yes. Definitely not everything, but it could give at least some control of where the outside edges mm-hmm. are, because that's really what that is. It's setting outside edges. And so perhaps I'll start working on that once I'm moved back in.
Yeah. And I have another thing we need to talk about at some point.
Okay.
I want to do the opposite of that. I want to, if we ever wanted to attract the attention of the trickster.
Oh, that in some ways would be even easier, though there'd be an element of danger involved, certainly.
Of course. Not until I'm ready.
Are you talking about energizing yourself?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
I can't.
I'll need some time to make sure that you survive it. This isn't as simple as putting a flashlight on somebody. This mm-hmm. is exciting all of the energy and speeding all of the energy, every neuron, every cell, every atom in existence surrounding you,
mm-hmm.
and having that not cause you to erupt in flames or spout laser energy or release all of your magical gifts in a single moment.
Yeah, it would only need to be for a second. Okay. Obviously, this is a long shot. But I can't keep running forever.
Why don't you roll to provoke?
Okay. So that's an 11.
An 11, very nice. Yeah, so she just like pauses for a moment. And then he just like goes, listen, you know more or less what I use here. Can you make sure that this gets moved? I'll start working on that. I really appreciate you keeping me out of Falcon's hands for the past bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that your research and my research might interact in some interesting ways.
Yeah.
If I can figure out how to... I've certainly worked with stasis before, and bringing things into and out of stasis in different ways might be important to my goals as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think if they are moving to leave,
yeah,
then John's going to pick up the puck mask from wherever mm-hmm. he sort of has it, and he's going to turn around and kind of like wink at her and point and just be like, sometime I should introduce you to my friend Ramon. I think his situation would be very interesting to you.
And she kind of just gives you a look of like, okay.
He's from the past. Sort of.
Interesting. We should talk. And she just is like shaking her head as she kind of leaves. Clearly like a little bit like, oh my gosh, what is this kid getting me into? All right. So as soon as Dr. Amari is out, Holly is like, hood up. And just starts going, like, we need to move these boxes, and starts going to
help.
Okay. And move and not be near you.
Yeah.
If she can avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does Puck go if he just needs, like, a minute of time? Like, normally I would say the lighthouse.
Yeah.
But, like, with someone else living there,
yeah,
that's
still
the case?
He would probably just... start, like, he would probably take the mask off,
okay,
and return to his regular clothes.
Yeah.
Maybe I think in this situation he's probably keeping on the like the black, it's like a jacket that has a hood.
Yeah.
So he's still wearing most of the costume, but it just kind of doesn't look like a hero costume when he's not doesn't have the mask and antlers and stuff. And he would just get up out of the like under area where this is. Mm-hmm. And, like, Holly knows how to get back. She's pretty much good now.
Yeah.
And she knows how to contact him.
Yeah.
And he might just go wandering around the campus.
Okay.
Just to sort of like be around, like he's been spending a lot of time, I imagine, at home alone, mm-hmm. sleeping and eating. It's maybe like a holiday break at school.
Yeah.
And then just going back to the lighthouse.
Okay.
And so he's been spending a lot of time with like Holly is roughly his age.
Yeah.
And so he hasn't really seen a whole lot of adults.
Yeah.
Other than like when he goes to like the grocery store. And so just to like go wander around a bunch of like college age kids, adults from his perspective, who like they know what they're doing with their lives. They're intelligent. They're not worried. They're like, mm-hmm. they're stressed about school, but that's all like normal stuff.
Yeah.
And just to kind of like be around that.
Cool. So you're walking through, and we get like several different panels. Like we see inside of a lecture hall, Dr. Morris standing up on top of the podium, giving like a lecture to a bunch of gathered students. And we see some people like throwing a frisbee. It's very like classic. It's very classic college.
Yeah.
View, right? Like it is nothing surprising. A couple people like cuddling while working on some homework and stuff like that. And then we get John just kind of like in the dining hall. And from the dining hall, you can see just a little down the hallway, there's like the campus radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just sort of in there. People let him through places because
they just don't pay attention to him.
And he just gets this view just out of the cafeteria past like this very like mixed group of college students that some are like have obvious mutations and things like that. And there's obviously also a lot of mundane humans and things going on. But like basically down the hallway, he sees this, this window that is the college radio station. And in that he sees two people sitting in there. One is a college student that is just on the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is his rival and nemesis and very popular actual radio host, Jack Chance, who is the avatar of the trickster god.
Of course he is.
And is just kind of lucky. He's just very lucky.
But he doesn't know who John is.
He doesn't know who John is. No, he's been trying to track John and figure out who John is. He's in the right place in the right time to have an interaction, but because he tends to follow that sort of luck thing.
Yeah.
But for now, John is still hidden.
Yeah.
Although the fact that Jack Chance is now ending up in a place that John is by coincidence is not a good sign. That's happened just once before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was immediately followed by John almost being completely found by the trickster.
Yeah.
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 So, what do you do?
Oh, God. I think that John would kind of look for, a lot of radio stations have, and then because it's a campus radio station, they might have like a room where someone could go and sit and listen, like for people, the other radio station hosts and like the people who work there to listen to whoever's on the air.
Cool.
And there might be a couple other students in there that he could sort of sit down next to and listen to see what Jack Chance is talking about.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so there's a couple of people in there. Some of them are just like a couple of people just working on some homework. The host's girlfriend is there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like watching her doing the recording. And John, do you like awkwardly sit down on top of a table somewhere? You're trying to look normal.
He's sitting in a normal chair.
Okay.
He probably looks really awkward sitting in a normal chair. And he kind of like, he crosses his arms and crosses his legs. He maybe picks up a magazine. It's like really uncomfortable and awkward.
Nice. Great. And Jack Chance is, so we cut in halfway through and hear just danger to the city, right? Like, we have systems of taking care of people that we trust and believe in, and then we've got, like, these wild groups. Like, I'm not just talking about the Capes, right? I'm not talking just about Centurion. I'm talking about Falcon. That is this big organization thinking they can come in and just take over running things. And the reason that we've got that is all of these capes and hoods out there thinking that they can just use their mutant powers to just do whatever they want, right? And like, I'm not against mutants. I've got a lot of good friends that are mutants. I have no problem with mutants. Sally back at the station, she's a mutant. Wonderful woman. Love her so much, so we care so deeply for each other back at the station, and that's just part of being part in radio, right? But having people that think I can just do this thing because I'm strong enough is what is destroying this city and is what is ultimately destroying this country.
And John is gonna kind of like put the awkward magazine down, and he's gonna stand up, and I think he's gonna go find like a closet somewhere.
Okay.
And he's gonna put on his mask.
Okay.
Because it's time to be Puck.
Okay, cool.
He finds a closet that's full of like old records.
Nice.
Like, because it's a college camp. It's like a college radio station, so it's got a room full of old records. Nobody's
we both did college radio. We maybe, know this to be true.
Maybe no one has gone in there in a little while.
Yeah.
And there's always like there's a corner that's got like all the classical records.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely no one has gone back there in a while. And he just finds a place where it's dark and that no one's going to see, and he just puts on the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to walk back into the actual like studio, the recording area.
So there is, so like as you're leaving the closet, there's like just some like of that black heat mist just like leaves the room with you.
Yeah.
Like it's starting to get pervasive.
Yeah.
And you go to the front of the radio station. From where the window is, from where you come down the hallway, Jack hasn't seen you yet.
Yeah.
But the door is locked.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I think that John would spawn a little fairy.
Okay.
And have it try to, like, tinker with the mechanics of the door and unlock it.
Okay.
He could probably break his way in.
Yeah.
But that may not be the greatest look right now.
Yeah.
So he's trying not to do that.
This is normally something that I'd be like, yeah, you do it. But I'm actually going to have you roll to unleash your powers. Because around Jack Chance, things don't always work well.
Yeah. So I'm going to roll plus freak. 10, 11, 12.
Did you remember your minus for unleashing your powers?
No, I did not.
I mean, it'd still be a 10.
Yeah, so it's 10.
So the fairy spawns and goes to the door and just like slips a couple of legs into the keyhole and it just turns and opens.
Yeah.
There's a kind of like hipstery looking kid. He's gonna be on deck next. He's got like a big beard and a beanie.
Mm-hmm.
And the door opens and he goes like, "Hey, I think the interview already started."
"It's okay. Sorry, I'm late. I'll just get set up."
"Yeah. Okay."
And then he'll push through.
Yeah.
And find a chair next to Jack Chance.
And Jack is in the middle. Like, it seems like this college radio host, it seems like she just hasn't said anything for like 10 minutes. Like, there's like occasional times where she has a speech bubble, but it's completely covered by his speech bubbles.
Yeah.
He's doing his show on her show.
Yeah.
Very occasionally pausing so that she'll agree with something and then he can jump back in. How do we even manage the level of enforcement when like we've got 200 new mutants suddenly bursting into Protean City? And then he just stops. And he just looks at you and looks at the host. And she goes, "We have another special guest here," and like you can see, there's a professor in the next room over that's giving her like a thumbs up, like, "Yeah, keep going, thumbs up." And she goes, "A surprise guest, the hero, Puck. Welcome to the studio."
And he's going to sit down, and there's probably going to be an awkward moment as he tries to like figure out how to put headphones on, because he's got antlers.
He's got antlers and
so,
a hood.
And a hood, and a mask. So maybe he's got them on like backwards over the back of the hood or something. He figures something out.
Yeah.
And he pulls the microphone close to him, and he's just like, "So I heard you guys were talking about heroes and stuff. I thought I might have a different point of view."
"Yeah, Puck, welcome. Thanks for coming on down here. We really appreciate the heck out of it. Can I say heck?" I'm going to keep saying heck. And he kind of like gives like a little like jovial wink and thumbs up to the professor in the other room. And then turns and just like claps a hand onto your shoulder and just goes, "You know that there is nothing I'd love to see more than your perspective. I just want to see and understand exactly how you interpret the world as you're going out there, Puck."
And I think that the little fairy that he used to like unlock the door, it's still like it's hanging out. It's on his shoulder, so it probably crawls over and like starts trying to like pry up Jack's hand or like poking at it or something.
And he's just like keeping, he's like moving his finger a little bit, but he's like, his hand has started to even like tighten on your shoulder a little bit.
Yeah.
And you are probably stronger than him.
Yeah.
But it still is that thing of, this is a grown adult grabbing your arm.
Yeah, it's forceful. Yeah. And so Puck would just say, "Thanks, Jack. You're great. We haven't spoken in a while. I think that menacing government organizations like Falcon, they need to be stopped sometimes when they come in and they endanger our city and they threaten the people who live here."
It is incredible to me that you and I are able to sit down and have this kind of a conversation, right? Because this is meaningful, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is, you and I have not always seen eye to eye.
Yeah, and Jack, remind me when the director of Falcon put on his giant power armor and came down to the center of the city to threaten the seat of government here in town. What were you doing?
I was asleep. It was 3 a.m.
Because I was out there protecting the city protecting citizens of the city and stopping that threat.
So, listen, you know I respect you so much. I love what you do. I just don't understand why you have to do it wearing a mask. You know what? This is a lucky coincidence. And he just kind of like turns to his side and like takes out a briefcase and pulls out a an application to be a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he like slaps it down on the table, like making sure, like getting that audio for the listening college audience.
Yeah.
And goes, I don't want you to stop what you're doing. I appreciate so much that you make this city feel safer. But I think that you can be a better savior by taking off that mask and putting on a badge. And does he have influence over you?
He does not. I have influence over him. Well, you see, Jack, this series of events that happened are a great example of why the city needs people like me. Because when a threat comes in and it's a big Falcon organization, well then heroes like the Centurion, they're a little, and the rest of the old guard, like they work for the town, they work for the city, and they are great heroes, but they need to tread lightly because they have to, like, there's politics involved. And they have to consider those things. And I don't have to consider those things. The only thing I have to consider is saving people. And so that's what I can do. That's what I bring to this city.
So what you're saying, if I understand this correctly, is the reason you're able to be effective is because your behavior is criminal. You couldn't possibly save people. You couldn't possibly make a difference if you were beholden to anybody, if you were beholden to anybody other than yourself. That's disappointing. That's disappointing, Puck.
No, Jack, you just don't understand. I'm sorry, it's complicated, and he's going to kind of like gesture at the other people and be like, and no offense to the rest of the people in this room, you're just a radio show host. You just don't understand these kinds of things, Jack. And so I think that you should just go home and let the adults deal with this, Jack. And I want to try to provoke him.
Yeah, what are you trying to provoke him into doing?
I guess just shutting up and going away.
Okay, you're trying to get him to leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a 5 minus 2 is a 3.
Oh, boy. So as you say that, you can feel Jack's hand on your shoulder,
mm-hmm.
just like tightening harder. And like, he doesn't have super strength, but by coincidence, he's kind of like landed in a place that's like a bit of a pressure point.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's a little painful. But then abruptly, there's a crack of lightning and the electricity in the radio station just shuts down. And actually, you can see like it just goes to blackness everywhere. Like the entire college has lost power.
Yeah.
And like you can see, like there's some windows that have like a little bit of light, and so it just gives us barely enough space to view what's kind of going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Puck's mask; we see it partially covered by Jack Chance's other hand, and two of his fingers just push into the eye holes of the mask mm-hmm. and start trying to rip it off of your face. There is that heat, those like that blackness, even darker than the blackness that is surrounding you, but he's trying to rip the mask from your face to figure out who you are. He just snarls out, "This is fucking over, kid. I'm finding you, and we're getting rid of you." He hasn't gotten it off your face yet,
yeah.
But like, he is going to rip it off your face.
I think that
if you can't stop him.
I think that having come in here and taunted Jack a little bit, and now sort of being threatened in the dark here, Puck is going to try to just get out.
Okay.
He's just trying to escape. He's done what he didn't really have a plan, but he just wanted to come in and push some of Jack's buttons, and he's done that clearly a lot.
Jack is pissed.
And that he's not ready or in a place to engage with Jack really right now. So he's just going to try to like slip out and disappear.
So again,
mm-hmm.
if this weren't Jack Chance,
I
would tell you can slip away from a person that doesn't have above.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're going to have to roll to unleash your powers.
Okay. So that's an 11 Minus the 2 because I'm guilty.
Okay.
Plus 2 because my freak is plus 2.
Okay.
Plus 1 because it's Jack Chance. So that's a 12 in total.
Okay, fantastic. So there's like definitely some scrambling.
He's got his hand on the mask.
Yeah.
And I think that what happens is John just kind of like is kind of flailing and gets his hands on Jack, and he pulls back and his head, like the mask comes off his face,
yeah,
but it's pitch black. No one can see anything. And John turns and sprints out the door with the hood pulled down.
Yeah.
And so then he gets out and away.
Yeah.
But Jack is left with the mask.
As John is like getting out into the hallway and like has the hood pulled up to cover his face, the lights all come back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jack is just holding the mask in his lap and just looks furious. And like everything is coming back to life. And like you see the professor go like 3, 2, 1, rolling.
Yeah.
And the hostess, sorry for that interruption. We rejoin Jack Chance, and the door slams shut as he like leaves to try to run after you.
Yeah.
He's not going to catch up with
you. Yeah.
We get him like just standing in the hallway, just holding and looking at the mask, and he turns it and just pulls it onto his own face, and there's just heat shimmer coming down from it for a moment, and then it just dissolves off of his face.
And so wherever he exits the building from the side, John, now not in costume, in just like his button-up polo shirt, leans back against the door or the wall of this building, and just kind of takes a breath. That was a little bit closer than he was expecting.
Protean City Comics is a production of the Stop, Hack, and Roll Podcast Network. It is produced and edited by James Malloy. This issue was emceed by Brandon Leon Gambetta, who can be found on Twitter at Dr. Captain Cobalt. Puck is played by James Malloy, who can be found on Twitter at AndTheMeltdowns. The introduction is voiced by Peter DiGilio. All music was composed by Jim Malloy. Masks, A New Generation, is a game by Brendan Conway and published by Magpie Games. This podcast is created thanks to the financial support of backers at patreon.com/stophackandroll. Join us on our Discord at discord.stophackandroll.com. Follow us on Twitter at Protean City and on Instagram at Protean City Comics. Subscribe to Protean City Comics on iTunes or anywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Wednesday to find out what thrilling adventures lie ahead.